Yo, have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? When I was trying to get this podcast off the ground, I had a lot of questions. How do I record an episode? How do I get my show onto all the apps that people like to listen to? How do you make money? The answer was pretty simple for me. I started using Anchor. Anchor is a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. And best of all, it's 100% free and super easy to use. And now, Anchor can match you with great sponsors who want to advertise in your podcast. So that means you can get paid immediately, like right away. In fact, that's what I'm doing right now by reading you this ad. It's super simple. So if you always wanted to start a podcast, let's start now. Go to anchor.fm/start to join me and the diverse community of producers using Anchor. Again, that's anchor.fm/start. See you soon. What's up, everybody? And welcome back to the Stretch 4 podcast. I'm your host, Peter Tran, and on the line, I got my pick and pop partner, Josh Cohen. How you doing?
Not great. It's not a great morning for us Raptors fans.
Tough loss, man. Tough loss.
Indeed.
Banger in the paint, Rajan Walia. How you feeling?
A little down, because that was our shot at seeing a good long series between the Raps and the Bucks, but I know we're going to talk about that later.
Relax.
You okay there, Josh?
I'm good, but, you know, just because I lost the one game doesn't mean shit.
Man, sounds like you still got tears in your eyes.
I do.
Been weeping all night?
Yeah, man. Went through a couple boxes of Kleenex. It was a tough game last night.
All right, so as you all have guessed, we're going to talk about the Bucks-Raptors series first. Game one has passed. Milwaukee 108, Toronto 100. Toronto got up to a pretty good lead at one point, right? They were up like 13 in the first half. I think 13 or 17, somewhere around there. And it looked like they had full control in the first half. And then second half was, a bit shaky. Not really surprisingly, only three Raptors scored in the second half. That was Siakam, Leonard, and Kyle Lowry. And then Kyle Lowry popped off in the fourth quarter, dropped 17. Except no one else scored in the fourth quarter other than Kyle Lowry. Which led the Bucks to score 32 points. And then led to their win. Josh, how the hell did they not score in the fourth quarter other than Kyle Lowry?
I don't know. It's just like the basketball god just laughing at us. They're like, oh yeah, Kyle Lowry's been trash on offense pretty much the entire postseason. He's done the little things, obviously, to help you win. But in this, you know, most important game of their season up to this point, Kyle Lowry has, you know, I think he had 13 or 15 points in the fourth quarter, and his teammates went 0 for 15 in like some weird Twilight Zone fourth quarter. It was really odd to watch. And the biggest thing that stood out to me, though, was the rebounding in the fourth quarter, especially to start off with the bench. They just couldn't get a defensive rebound to save their lives. And Milwaukee was scoring in every possession because they were getting like two or three opportunities every possession. Mirotić was killing them. And their guards weren't boxing out either. Like Brogdon and Bledsoe were going to the boards and getting those little tap-out rebounds. And I think that's the thing that killed them the most.
Brook Lopez had four offensive rebounds last night. Also to go with 29 points. That guy was a beast. And Gasol did not check him at all on defense. Right? Like every time you would see Brook either trailing the play for a three, which he obviously does all the time. But even for rebounds, Gasol just never put a body on him. Man, put your ass into the guy and box out. What are you doing?
Brook Lopez is a big guy and obviously he fits really well into the system, but that was a standout performance. He dominated, and I think it really started before the three-point makes. He just had some nice tip-ins on the glass that really, like, started the Milwaukee run, because I think they got out-rebounded the Raps 60-46 in the game, and I think rebounding was a huge point going into the playoffs, and against Philly, whenever they won the rebounding battle, they won the game. So, all in all, I think that was a game that you're going to remember this in the series as the one that got away.
Yeah, and, with Brook Lopez, I think they made an adjustment after the first quarter where he missed a few shots. Like, he shot a couple of three-point shots where it just went off the backboard. And then they started, when Giannis was on the bench, they started picking and rolling with him. And instead of popping out like he normally does, he was rolling to the basket, especially against Serge. And he was just overpowering him. Like he takes his two steps in the slowest fashion I've ever seen. But it's really effective. He gets to where he wants to go. Like a couple of those reverse layups, I'm like, there's no way he's going to be able to make it to the opposite side of the basket. And then, you know, it seems like 15 seconds later after taking his two steps, he gets there. So he was more dominant on the inside than he really was on the outside. I know he had some like really key shots in the fourth quarter from the outside, but overall, up until that point, like he was dominating the inside by getting to the basket, which is something that they don't normally run for him. They normally just have him stick on the outside, the top of the key, just to give Giannis space. And they made a nice key adjustment. I think that was the biggest adjustment of the game overall, just getting Brook Lopez involved and doing what he used to do, you know, before the three-point evolution.
Yeah, like I said, I think it was more than just his three-point shot. Obviously, like hitting those trays at the end, I think he had two big ones, and then Mirotić hit a big three to really kind of ignite the Milwaukee offense in the fourth. I think one other thing that has to be talked about is the lineup that Nick Nurse played at the beginning of the fourth, and this is just something that's consistently happened this playoffs. He had a lineup of Norman Powell, Fred VanVleet, and Kyle Lowry, Siakam, and I believe it was Gasol to start the fourth. And I think they had a 7-point lead going into the fourth, and within 2 minutes of Kawhi checking in, they gave up 9 points. And didn't score a basket. I think Norman Powell missed an easy layup, like one of those reverse layups that just didn't go in. And you're like, man, you got to make those in this type of game. But just looking...
Yeah, Danny Green on one of those too.
Yeah, and like just looking at the stats, like Ibaka was minus 17, VanVleet was minus 10, Powell was minus 6, and surprisingly, Lowry was minus 10, but that's probably because he was with Fred VanVleet for those minus 10 points. All the other Raptors were more or less in the positive. When their starters played, they were a better team, obviously defensively, and they weren't giving up fast breaks. But I think the whole series is going to come down to which supporting cast, like outside of the big three, and this may make me sound silly, but I feel that Middleton, Giannis, and Bledsoe are offensively equivalent to Kawhi, Kyle, and Siakam. I think even the edge goes to the Raptors for just getting consistent point production. But outside of those three players from each team, whichever team can get like 30 to 35 points from their respective other scoring is going to win that game and probably end up winning the series. And yesterday, Brook Lopez almost did it all by himself.
I wouldn't say Bledsoe is the third guy for the Bucks. It's sort of like a revolving door with that team, right? Like, you know, Giannis and Middleton are going to bring it every night. Even though Middleton only had 11 points yesterday, he was still a factor.
Yeah.
But that third guy, like, Bledsoe hasn't really shown up these playoffs. He's had like one or two good games. And he sort of just like takes a back roll
again. On offense,
yeah. We talked more about George Hill in the second round than we did Eric Bledsoe.
Fair enough, but I think like in terms of getting that same production out of Kyle Lowry, like I think they're very similar in terms of like they can step up and give you like a 20-point game, hitting a few threes, and that's kind of what you expect from Lowry. Lowry had his big game of the playoffs yesterday, but I think Lowry averages like 12 points, 10 points in the playoffs, and I think that's a production that Eric Bledsoe consistently can give you just because he plays like starters minutes. The big players that stepped up obviously yesterday was Brook Lopez, and Brogdon was very efficient in the minutes he played.
Brogdon always kills the Raptors too.
Yeah.
So annoying to watch him play.
Yeah, but
but he's such a good player
too. I maybe it's my bias, but I struggle to see how Toronto's going to get consistent production from players outside of Siakam, Leonard, of course, and Lowry. Like, Gasol needs to start hitting at least 30% of his threes. Like, he's so open on all of them. Like, they're not even contested looks. And it's allowing Lopez just to hover on defense and create nuisance for Kawhi and Siakam. Like, Siakam would go into the paint, even if he beat Giannis on a step, there'd just be Brook Lopez all over him. And he had nothing, like, no game plan on how he was going to attack the rim just because the bodies were very big inside.
How did you guys feel watching Siakam start the game against Giannis? He started with, out of his first three field goal attempts, one was a dunk, and then the other two were swatted by Giannis. I thought he was going to have like a rough game, and then he obviously did, shooting 6 for 20, but it never looked like he could get comfortable against Giannis all night.
I think it's because of how Milwaukee's defense plays. You know, they're daring players that don't take a high volume of shots to take those shots, right? They've done that all year. They want Gasol to be taking 15 shots a game. They want, you know, guys like Fred VanVleet, Norman Powell to be taking more shots than they're used to. Mm-hmm. And they often choose within the possession, like, which guy they're going to give a three-point shot to because their defense is, you know, zeroed in on not giving up points in the paint and points at the rim. So that's where it goes back to Gasol actually looking at the basket. In the first quarter, he was great. He took the shots that were there. He's being ultra-aggressive. And then as the game went on, when he got those, you know, through passes back to the three-point line, and he was, you know, should have taken the shot right away, he was hesitating, looking for the side pass to run to the pick and roll, and then instead of doing that, he just chucked it up after 3 seconds of just waiting. Like, there's one possession in the fourth quarter where he got the ball behind the 3-point line. Giannis is guarding him, and Giannis was like 4 feet off of him, not even like looking at him basically, and he wouldn't even take the shot. So that's something that has to change. Like, he just has to change his DNA on the court, which is not something that Gasol has done so far in the playoffs. Like, he needs to be a guy that averages 15 points a game in the series for the Raptors to have a chance.
Yeah, I think Gasol is probably one of the bigger X factors, just the way they play defense. Like, we talked about this in the regular season. Like, they're the team that gives up the most three-pointers and probably the most open-look threes. And even yesterday late in the game, like, you could just clearly tell the strategy for Milwaukee on defense was collapse and get bodies around the person who's going to the rim, and that leaves open shots. Like, they were open shots, and the way Toronto has been shooting, they didn't have a terrible shooting night. They started off hot and cooled down towards the end of the night, but you expect Danny Green and Marc Gasol and even Fred VanVleet and Norman Powell, like, they've shot the ball pretty well in the regular season just to shoot the ball better. And again, Toronto needs to take advantage of those open looks to have a chance, because I think if you play the way they did against Milwaukee, Milwaukee's not going to shoot 24 or 25% from three during the whole season. They're going to turn it up, and it's going to be a lot harder. Like, that was the game that the Raptors had on the road.
Is fatigue going to play a factor in all this afterwards too? Siakam and Leonard both played 42. Gasol, Lowry played 40, which is pretty high for Gasol. I don't think he's hit 40 at all so far with the Raptors. And then Green had 35 minutes. The bench at most was Serge with 17 minutes. Like, they need some, at least some minor production from the bench just to get these guys a rest. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you can't.
They got it in the first half, though. You know, they actually played pretty well in the first half. And that's why the Raptors are able to extend their lead a little bit. And I don't know. I think the biggest adjustment in game two might be playing Serge more. Because in the regular season, he was averaging 22 points a game against Milwaukee, because they were giving him that open shot at the free throw line or the open shot from behind the 3-point line, and he was hitting them. And if Gasol's not willing to take that shot, maybe you go with Serge a little bit more and you have him play with the starters a little bit more, and maybe take Gasol out earlier and have him play with the bench so those guys can have a guy that they can use on the pick and roll. I think that might be the biggest adjustment that Toronto makes. And the other adjustment that Toronto needs to make just from now on is just playing Kawhi with the bench. Like, same idea, take him out a little bit earlier in the first and third quarters and have him be, like, the main guy to get these guys open on the perimeter, because Lowry and Siakam with the bench just wasn't working last night, and that shouldn't be a lineup that you start in the fourth quarter of a Eastern Conference Finals playoff game.
Hell no.
Yeah.
Do you find Serge shoots less mid-range shots now?
Yes.
Why is that?
Because there's less space.
What do you mean?
Milwaukee's defense is one that condenses to, like, the free throw line area and into the paint. So Toronto's offense just hasn't shown that it's, you know, smart enough or quick enough to move the ball, to get the ball to the wing, to get those wide open threes. In the first half, they were doing it perfectly. I mean, Norman Powell had a couple threes too, where he was just wide open. But in the second half, they weren't making the quick passes off the pick and roll.
No, but even I find, since they acquired Marc Gasol, every time that I see Serge in a pick and pop situation, he's always hovering back to the three line now instead of the mid range where he was a killer to start the year. Like, remember when he was shooting 60-70% from maybe 18 feet, 16 feet? And now I never see him inside anymore. It's either he's attacking the rim, which is great, or he's taking a contested three.
I also think that has to do with Kyle Lowry not being as aggressive as he was. Like, in terms of just getting the defender on Kawhi just to play a little more defense. Like, I feel Kyle Lowry's a bit more passive on offense off the pick and roll, so that's not getting enough penetration for allowing Serge to roll. But he seems to be settling more for the 3-point shot. And I think, like, we all remember kind of what happened late in the game. Like, the Raptors' offense got very, very stagnant. Like, it always seemed like Kyle Lowry dribbling the ball up, giving the ball to Marc Gasol on the very, very high post, and then Gasol just looking for Leonard coming off of an off-ball screen, and then it was Leonard dribble, 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 dribble.
He dribble, 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 dribble.
To get to the rim or to kick it out. That was like the offense. And I think that happened like 7 or 8 straight possessions. Like I can visualize it and draw it up, but I'm just saying like, I think like there wasn't enough movement on the Raptors. And I think Ibaka obviously has to play more, and fatigue, just to answer your question, I don't think fatigue's going to make an issue because those weren't hard, like 42 minutes. Like I thought the Raptors in terms of intensity matched the Bucks' intensity. It's not like they were like getting outrun or whatnot, and it didn't seem like it was overly physical, and I think players were getting their shots and getting to the locations they wanted. It was just they weren't making them, and
I was more concerned in a defensive situation where if you're playing Marc Gasol 40 minutes, he's not going to be able to box out kind of situation, or Pascal in that matter. Right, like that's a kind of fatigue that I'm worried about. It's not that they can't hit shots, because whatever, shots are shots. You'll get your shots up no matter what. But defense is where you really want your energy up.
But
that's what my concern would be.
Yeah, like I still like, maybe Josh can help me answer, or even you, Peter. Like I still don't know why there isn't more of an emphasis on having Gasol match Brook Lopez's minutes. And then once Lopez is out, then that's when you can put in Ibaka, because I think Ibaka against all their other bigs is a good matchup in terms of defensively, even offensively. I just, Brook Lopez creates a little more problems inside, and I don't think Ibaka is much of an obstacle for Brook.
I think it depends how they play Brook. If they continue to have him, you know, playing the pick and roll and get to the basket, then Serge is not a good matchup for him. But he's just standing on the outside, then anybody can guard him, honestly. They could put Danny Green on him.
But
if he's just going to stand up, wouldn't be argument, might as well just have a guy who's not going to, you know, that can just roam sort of and just, you know, be able to get back to Brook and cut off the 3-point shot.
But what happens if his game revolves around who's on him?
No, well, I mean, it all depends, right? If they're switching everything and, you know, Brook is able to get a smaller guy on him, then it's going to be barbecue chicken. But I don't know if that's going to continue throughout the series. Like, Toronto's going to make adjustments. Brook Lopez is not going to be able to score 20 points again, probably in the series. So, I mean, it was an aberration both ways. Like, Lowry's not going to go 7-for-8 or whatever he was, and Brook Lopez is not going to score 29 points. But I think, as you said, the supporting cast are going to have to step up. And game two is going to be a really important game for Toronto, obviously, to take down. Because if they go down 2-0, it's a very low chance they're going to be able to come back.
All right, game two predictions. Raj?
I'm going to say Milwaukee. I think they just have more weapons.
Josh?
The heart says Toronto, so let's go with Toronto.
Aw, that's sweet. And series prediction, Raj.
I'm going to say Bucks in 5. I thought that was the game that could have pushed it to 6 or 7. But I think Raptors will have close games in Toronto. I think they'll grab one, but they'll lose the second, and Bucks will close it out at home.
Jay?
Raps in 6.
Wow.
So,
ballsy.
Yeah, that's ballsy, yeah.
All right, I'm going Bucks in 6. Sorry, Josh. And I also think the Bucks take game 2.
That's all right. Situation where the brain says Raps, the brain says Bucks in 6, but the heart says Raps in 6 or 7. So we'll see what happens.
You're a very sweet fella.
I try.
All right, let's move on. Golden State takes a dominating victory in game 1, 116-94. Steph Curry just absolutely pops off for 36 points, 9-15 from the 3. Klay Thompson also there, 26. Shoots 3-of-9 from 3 and 10-of-24 from the field. And let's go with Logo Lillard. Is that what his name is now? 19 points. 4-of-12 shooting from the field. He was absolutely abysmal. 7 turnovers. And the Warriors just take a commanding lead of this series.
Yeah, Portland is just probably 2 players away from being able to compete with Golden State. They need a guy off the pick and roll, basically Nurkic. To be able to make plays off the dribble and make that pass to the corner or just dominate the paint in those 4-on-3 situations. They're just doubling Lillard every single time. And the only time Lillard is really scoring is when he gets Steph on him and he gets an isolation situation, because when they bring the pick and roll up, they're just trapping him every single time. And then McCollum is being guarded by Klay Thompson, and he's not going to be able to get off the same way as he did versus Denver.
Actually, you know who's going to be... Maybe like the biggest factor for the Blazers? It might be more Harkless in this series.
I think it's Zach Collins. I think it's Zach Collins and Aminu. Because Harkless had a good game last game, and it didn't really matter, right? Like, he was hitting his open shots, and he was getting in the lane for those cuts.
He was, but defensively, he was a beast. He actually stayed with Steph, and like every time they got switched on.
I might consider to start him. That's the other big issue for Portland, right? Like, the way they're guarding that pick and roll is not sustainable. You give up 9 threes to Stephen Curry because you're playing your big, like, 15 feet back. And once the pick hits, Steph is wide open. It's just like a practice shot for him every time. Like, they got to do something different.
Oh, they're just going to press him next game. Or they won't hedge as much, right? Like, you have to just run up your big. But the issue is that Cantor can't stay up there.
Yeah.
So no, I think like, ultimately, like, the main adjustment Portland's going to have to make is probably starting Zach Collins.
Yeah.
Just have him try to chase around Steph and do what, you know, Houston did, and either switching onto him or just trapping him in certain situations, because he's the one guy that you have to make sure that he doesn't hit more than, like, 4 or 5 threes, and you got to jump out at him at every, you know, possible situation.
Yeah, I think Zach Collins' defense is probably going to be something that they're going to utilize more. He only had, I think, 15 or 16 minutes in the entire game, and he's a much better defender than Cantor, who plays very little defense. But obviously, you're going to miss that production on the offensive end and those offensive rebounds that Cantor provides. But I think this series really like comes down to the role players for Portland being able to outplay the role players for Golden State, and they have to outplay them like by a lot. Like, they have to be able to outscore the Golden State bench by like 20 points. And they didn't last game. And when you have 22 turnovers and give up the amount of threes they did, I don't think you have any chance of winning the game. I think if Portland plays their best game, they can be very competitive, but it's very hard to play your best game for four games in a series. And I think if they make mistakes like they did last game, I think Golden State's going to punish them. And again, if Nurkic was here, I think the series could be a more competitive series. That being said, you can also say if KD was there, then it wouldn't be much of a series anyway. So,
well, KD and DeMarcus Cousins.
Yeah.
We always forget about DeMarcus too, right?
Yeah, but KD's the big factor. But yeah, it's fun to watch. I think the series will be more enjoyable than watching the Houston Rockets versus the Golden State Warriors in terms of just how they play and how the offenses work, and it'll be more of an offensive explosion, and just easier on the eye to watch than some teams trying to draw fouls and like flopping all over both teams respectively.
Yeah, but competitive wise, it's not going to be as fun to watch.
No.
This is a way easier series for Golden State to run their actions and get what they want.
It'll be fun for the first like half of every game, maybe the first three quarters.
Yeah, Portland just needs our guards to go supernova, and to do so, they're just going to have to pick out matchups and hopefully get, you know, non-Klay Thompson, Iguodala guys onto those guards, and then just go ISO, because the pick and rolls are not going to work if they continue just to swarm them, unless they're able to split it, but they haven't shown that they're able to do that so far, because Looney's been a pretty good defensive player the entire playoffs. So unless you're taking advantage of the 6 minutes that Bogut plays, and then maybe Jordan Bell when he's in the game, or maybe Jarebko if he's in the game, like, you just got to pick out those matchups. Same idea with the other series too. Like, I think both Golden State and Milwaukee are just picking out players that they want to have, you know, taking those shots. Aminu is a big guy in this series where he has to be able to hit the 3-point shot, and he just didn't do it in game one. And he didn't do it last series either, but Collins stepped up in the last series, but in, you know, game one, he wasn't really a factor at all. So, honestly, it honestly comes down to the role players hitting wide open shots, which is very simplistic to say, but if Golden State's going to leave one guy open every possession, then, you know, you just got to make the shots.
Yeah, sorry. No, I was just going to say, like, Lillard and McCollum do have a matchup problem, because Golden State at all times when they're starting lineup, like, they don't really have an advantage over Iguodala, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, and even if they play Kevin Looney, which they do tend to do down the stretch, those are like four good defenders that they don't have a strong advantage where they can just kind of pick up on. The real weakness is Steph, and maybe that is a strategy, kind of what Houston did, just make Steph work defensively and maybe get him in foul trouble. That's maybe the best way to limit his scoring.
What if you just run Rodney Hood out there more often than Aminu? Someone who can actually contribute on offense. He's a decent defender. He can stay in front of guys at least. So what if you just had Hood, CJ, Lillard, I don't know, Harkless and Cantor as your lineup, or Collins instead of Cantor? That might be a much more versatile like defensive lineup. You know what I mean?
I think if you do that, they're going to get killed on the boards, because Golden State in a couple of those Houston games, they really took advantage when Houston went like three guards or had Austin Rivers in the lineup instead of, you know, Clint Capella. There were situations where like Golden State would really take advantage of that. So I'm not sure there really is an answer in the series, to be honest.
Yeah,
like the other series, you can look at certain things and be like, yeah, this is what Toronto can do better. This is what Toronto can do to adjust. But in this series, like, Golden State's just too good.
Yeah, I think if you do that lineup, I think it actually matches up better. And I think they'll be more competitive throughout. But I think Looney and Draymond will clean up the glass and they'll give second chances for Klay and Steph to hit their shots. And I think that's a more competitive lineup. And I think it'll be funner to watch if they do go with kind of a more versatile lineup, like you said.
Yeah, man. I want versatility. I just want like as much free flowing offense as possible. And Aminu is not going to help you offensively. Like defensively, he's a monster. We all know that. But if the guy can't hit a shot, then he's an absolute liability on the offensive end. They're going to treat him like how they treated Tony Allen in like 2015 and just leave him absolutely wide open. And just let him do whatever he wants. He's not going to hit anything.
Yeah. I think Rodney Hood. But the thing is, Rodney Hood's minutes, even though he played more than Aminu last game, I think he's more of a weapon off the bench than he is a starter. And he probably gives you that offensive production that you need in your second unit, because Portland tends to run their team like 8 or 9 deep, even in the playoffs. And if you're just running a lineup with like Seth Curry, Evan Turner, and Aminu, you're going to struggle.
Oh, that's sad.
Well, I guess if Kanter does play bench minutes, then he would be the guy to go to.
That's true. All right, game 2 predictions. What do you guys got for tonight, Raj?
I'm going to say Golden State, but a more competitive game, but I think they pull away in the fourth, as we talked about.
Josh?
Yeah, I think the same thing. I think it'll be a closer game, more fun to watch, but ultimately Golden State's going to win by 7 or 8 points. And, you know, with Portland, I think the other adjustment they can make is just, as we said before, just trapping Steph more in the pick and roll. But also, if you want to go to the extreme, just match up Kanter's minutes with when Steph is not on the court. I know Kanter's like a big, you know, production guy for Portland, but I think we're back to the situation last year where it's can't play Kanter. So I think you're going to have to start Collins and then just have Kanter play in the minutes that Steph is not and just try to dominate the boards in the 10 to 15 minutes that he's not playing.
Yeah, and he can give you like 12 to 15 points in those 15 minutes.
Yeah, playing against bench lineups too.
Yeah.
All right, well, Terry Stotts, you heard it. That's the adjustment. Play Kanter off the bench. All right, what do you guys have for the series? Do we expect a clean sweep?
Nah, Golden State always relaxes, so Portland's going to get game 3. It'll be a 5-game series, I think. Maybe 6.
No, I'm going to say...
Maybe 6.
It's more, wow, more like 4 or 5, and I think Golden State's probably going to relax in game 4. Give a gentleman sweep.
Yeah, that's what I have, too. Those gentlemen in Golden State, very respectable. Let's move on. We haven't talked in a while, so let's show some love to the teams that didn't get to advance to this series, or this round of the playoffs, rather. Let's talk about the Sixers. There's been a lot of talk of after that crazy-ass Kawhi Leonard shot in Game 7. Embiid leaves the floor crying. Ben Simmons still doesn't have a jump shot. They don't know what's going to happen with Jimmy Butler, Tobias Harris, or J.J. Redick. That's 60% of their starting lineup. This team could be in an absolute, I don't want to say rebuild, but they could look completely different next season. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they have a lot of players that, even the coach, there was obviously a lot of uncertainty around Brett Brown before it was clarified earlier this week. I think the team overall has some great pieces. Obviously, I think each of their players has one big aspect to work on, like Embiid's health. Simmons needs to develop a shot. I think J.J. Redick needs to re-sign, obviously. And Butler and Harris are the bigger question marks going into this offseason. I think they can probably do with just one of those two players. I think Butler fits the team better in terms of personality. And he's more of an all-around player. So I think that's more beneficial kind of to the team and a secondary ball handler. I think they can do without Tobias Harris. I think they're more in the market for a 3-and-D guy, a player who just kind of spaces the floor, can crash the boards and give you 3-pointers. Obviously, ideally, a player like PJ Tucker or a player they had like Robert Covington would be great for them. But I think at the like at the end of this offseason, we're going to see a team in Philadelphia that's probably going to be in the same position going into this team this year in terms of not the best team in the East, but a contending team.
I think they have to re-sign everybody, because if they don't, they're not going to have any cap space regardless. So if they sign two out of those three guys, they're going to already be at the cap number. Right now, they're $67 million overall. So if they give either Tobias Harris or Jimmy Butler $30 million, which is what they're demanding right now, you're at 97, and then you got to re-sign J.J. Redick for between 10 and 15, and then you're already at the number. So you're better off just re-signing all the guys and going over the cap and paying the luxury tax, which Philadelphia management said they would do before they made all these trades, and that they wanted to keep these guys together after the trades, versus going a different route, only signing maybe one of the three or two of the three, where you're still capped out anyway. So why even take the risk and, you know, getting rid of Tobias Harris and losing him for nothing when maybe later on you can trade him because he's only 26 years old, right?
He might walk though, right?
For more money.
Like if I were Tobias Harris, I would consider going to a team like Brooklyn or something that actually would give me the ball more often. I can show my skill rather than just
No, but you're also getting less years and less money by doing that. So if Philadelphia's offering you the contract that you want, why would you ever leave?
Because he's only 26. You take a short 2-year contract and then go for a major one somewhere else.
No, I think Tobias
Harris is not LeBron James. I don't think players think like that when they're like, you know, mid.
No.
Near all-star players.
I think they all think like that. That's the problem.
I think the higher like level everyone players wants that do, payday. Like Kevin Durant, LeBron, and guys that have done the one-on-one contracts, but not guys that are near all-star level. Like they want to get paid. And they want to get, you know.
Yeah, like DeMar DeRozan. Like that level of player. I agree with you, Josh. I think Tobias wants to get paid, and he wants a 4-year, like a probably a 4 or 5 year deal. And the reason being is if he gets injured or if he has a season, another season where he's not as productive, that's really going to hurt his value. Even though he is 26, quite a young player, I think he's going to ask a lot of money. And yes, Philly can re-sign him, and they will go into the luxury tax. I think the issue is you're committing a lot to players that don't fit well with players like Ben Simmons and Embiid, who you're eventually going to have to pay a lot. And I think they could probably find someone for a bit cheaper on a shorter contract that may fit the system better and help them down the stretch more than...
No, but they can't. That's the point, right? Like, if they sign Butler and they sign J.J. Redick, they're totally capped out, which means they can only sign somebody for, like, $5 million.
Yeah, they're kind of boned.
So, with Tobias Harris, at least they have his bird rights where they can sign him for whatever they want to and just pay the luxury tax. But if you lose them, you're losing them for nothing because you can't sign anybody anyway. It's the same situation that New Orleans is in last year in re-signing Jrue Holiday. They're already over the cap. So if they didn't give him the $30 million that he wanted, you lose him, and then you can't sign anybody else anyway because you're capped out. So
yeah.
You're better off.
That was the same thing with DeAndre a few years ago.
Like, they're pretty close to winning too, right? Like, they were pretty close to beating Toronto, and then they matched up pretty well with Milwaukee in the regular season. So who knows what happens then, and Milwaukee might be a whole different team next year. So Philadelphia's not that far away from being in the finals.
Yeah, but I think the East will look a bit different when the season starts next year, and they probably won't be the number one contender, but they'll be up there. They'll be a team that's expected to get a top four spot and push deep into the playoffs with the current roster, and obviously you hope Embiid stays healthy.
Hey, Ben Simmons might have like a 10-foot jump shot next year.
That's pushing it. Let's start with like 8 or 9.
All right, next team in the East, the Boston Celtics. Absolutely got demolished by the Bucks in 5 games this season, or this series. And Al Horford looks old. Kyrie Irving looks like he's already on the way out the door. Scary Terry has already said that he hates playing with this team and already wants out. And so they're basically just going to rely on Gordon Hayward and Jason Tatum next year, right? That's the quickest summary I could give about this garbage-ass team right now.
Yeah, I think this is the team that has the most turmoil in terms of what they're going to do going forward, because they're also in the Anthony Davis sweepstakes, and they have a manager who seems to be very adamant on getting him, even if it may be a 1-year rental. But I think Boston is probably going to end up losing Kyrie, and then they're going to be in that situation where they're going to have to pay Horford. And I think Horford's a great player. I think he does exactly what they need him to do, but if they're willing to pay him, even though their hands kind of in another cookie jar in terms of Anthony Davis, is another question. But I think this is the team that's probably going to see the biggest drop out of the four teams we're going to talk about. And I think that Boston kind of mismanaged their potential these last two or three years and making the signings they did. We always talked about the draft picks they had and the weapons, and now I think they're going to be depleted, and they're going to be a team that's probably going to drop the most and have the least expectations going into next year with their roster.
I think their offseason hinges on Horford because he has a player option at $30 million, and he's, I think he's 33 years old right now. So if you're Al Horford, you take that $30 million. Like, how do you turn down $30 million, right? Or do you take, or you, you know, decide to opt out, and then you try to get a three-year or four-year contract from Boston or another team? I think he's ultimately going to opt in because it's hard to turn down $30
million. Yeah, but if he signs...
Of course he's going to opt in.
Well, couldn't he just opt out and get like a three-year, like $50 million deal?
He could do that. Depends on, I guess, what side of the coin he's on, right? It depends what he wants to do with his, you know, his job security, how healthy he feels as a player. Because, again, most players in that situation that are near all-star level, they want to have the security and they want to be able to have like the long-term extension. But at the same time, he has $30 million. So he's probably not going to get that much on the open market. He might get $20 million, 20, 25, but it's hard to turn down $30 million for next year.
Yeah, but I would take three-year contract, especially at his age.
For sure. And it would be interesting to see if like he gets on the open market, which team goes after him, because there's no guarantee that Boston's going to re-sign him at that point, especially if Kyrie leaves. Like, what's stopping Al Horford from going to another contending team?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing, man. Where do you think they go from here? Who's gonna run the point for this team next year? How about that?
That's the other thing. Like, Kyrie's gonna be gone most likely, and then Terry Rozier has already said on 15 different cable shows that he doesn't want to be back. So,
man, I'm so tired of Terry Rozier.
I know.
Like, bro, how about you show up in the playoffs talking all your trash? Get out of here, man. You had one hot run. Relax.
Yeah, but that's a good point. Like, they don't have a point guard going into next year, and they're pretty much capped out, especially if they re-sign Horford. So I think, you know, a guy like Jason Tatum is going to have to really step up next year and take over the ball handling responsibilities on offense.
This is great. No. This is just great.
They're going to have to sign like a mid-level point guard, like a DJ Augustine type to run the team.
You are,
you know, both guys don't come back.
I think you're forgetting the actual leader of this team, Marcus Smart. Come on. He's going to run the point.
Yes.
They're going to run a very point guard-less system next year if he's the one running it. Oh, it's going to be a lot of him bringing it up. And then,
teams in the NBA if they do that.
Well, it's just going to be him. It's going to be him and Gordon Hayward more than Jason Tatum. What the hell would Jason Tatum handle the rock? He has no handle.
No, that's what I mean, though. Like, he has to come back a much better player because in his first season, he was handling the ball a lot in offense. But, you know, without them having potentially any point guards next year, they're going to have to get production from other guys, and obviously Hayward's going to have to step up and become what he looked like in parts last year, but or this year.
Hayward's going to be a lot better next year, man. Now that he's had a full year after his injury.
I hope so.
He's fine. All right, moving on. This one is for you, Josh. Do you regret the Houston Rockets giving Chris Paul this giant-ass contract where he's going to get paid... How much is it? $38 million in these next few years?
I think two or three more years, right?
I believe so. I think it's three more.
No. The answer is no. I mean, they had a chance last year and even this year to contend and, you know, possibly make the finals. So I don't think you have any regrets on just going for it as a team.
You're an optimistic guy. Chris Paul is going to make $38 million next year and then jump up to $41 and $44 in the next 2 years after that.
Yeah, that's a little long. I think, obviously, you're competitive for 2 years, and we'll see what kind of player Chris Paul returns as next year. I think you've seen kind of a little decline in his game and his ability to get his shot. But overall, this team was the team that probably pushed Golden State the furthest. Last year and even this year, we'll see what happens in the finals. But I think Houston's in a situation where they really can't do much different in terms of how they're going to change their team. They can maybe change their strategy, and especially down the stretch, how they're going to manage their offense and maybe even play a bit more defense. But as long as Golden State has the Splash Brothers, I think that's going to be kind of the kryptonite to Chris Paul. I think he's been eliminated by Steph Curry-led teams in, what, the last 4 or 5 years? I think if you're the Rockets, you kind of just have to ride it out for the next 2 or 3 years and just kind of keep going about it more or less the same way with the same roster.
No, if you're the Rockets, all you have to do is pray this offseason that Kevin Durant leaves a team and Golden State doesn't improve their bench. That's the way that you win the Western Conference. They still got one year left where they can be competitive and maybe be a top seed in the West next year. So, I mean, you're getting at least 3 years where you're going to be a contending team. So, and again, if you don't re-sign Chris Paul, then you're capped out anyway, so you can't really improve your team as is. And then there's more burden on James Harden to do what he does. Yeah. And he gets tired, as we've seen the last couple of seasons, by round one, round two, whenever. He's been in better shape this year, obviously, but the previous years just show that he can't carry the burden of being the guy for that long, especially going later in the
playoffs. They never should have traded for Chris Paul.
You're crazy.
I still maintain that position.
What, start Austin Rivers?
Rivers wasn't bad this year, but he's no Chris Paul. I think he was the best shot at the time. And again, Josh said it kind of correctly. You have a 3 year window, and look, the Raps traded everything for a 1 year window.
Hold on, no. Chris Paul is not Kawhi Leonard, though.
No, but it helps your window, though.
It does, but Chris Paul. They knew that they would have to pay Chris Paul
what
in the offseason coming
they do
up.
If they didn't get Chris Paul, they were capped out. James Harden was losing in the first round every year, or second round, and he was dying by the
What's
second
the difference?
Round anyway, playing against a San Antonio team that didn't have Kawhi Leonard. Like, come on.
What's the difference? He's still losing in the second round, except now you're locked up for $38 million a year, or more.
So you're basically telling James Harden and your fans, it's like James Harden had to re-sign with his contract last year too, right? Like, he re-upped at the Supermax.
Yo, he was going to re-up either way.
Yeah, he was.
You think James Harden's going to turn down that money? Strip club James Harden? Come on.
Yeah, well, come in a situation on. Where James Harden might just do a one money. And one then and see if Morey improves the team, right?
He could have, but he didn't.
No, he didn't.
I don't think
they got Chris Paul.
I don't think that was the deciding factor, man.
I think it absolutely was. Like, you want to make sure that the team around you is capable of getting to the finals, which they are if they weren't facing a historic type of team. And again, next year they're probably not going to be facing that team, so their window is still open.
I don't know, man. Chris Paul has like the worst record against Steph Curry ever.
Get me off the court again, boy. No, let him go.
Yeah, it
like historically he just.
A Chris Paul-led team was the last time. Western Conference team to beat the Warriors. Let's just remember that.
Congratulations. When was that?
2014.
Yeah. And congratulations. Before Steph became, like, two-time MVP Steph Curry. Congratulations. Chris Paul in his athletic prime at 29 years old at the time. Not 34.
Yeah. I think also that stat's incorrect. I think the last team that beat the Warriors, Steph led Warriors, was LeBron James in
the Western.
Okay, I missed that part, but yeah, that's a long time ago, Josh. Things change. That's $160 million probably over 4 years that changed.
Yeah, but you guys say it's a bad deal, and yet you have no recourse to spend that money elsewhere anyway. So you're not going to improve your team, and then James Harden's going to die by the first round. So let's
okay. How about during this offseason, we'll go back to that summer and see what they could have done instead.
You can't do anything. You're capped out. That's the point. Like, you got to re-sign your players.
No, I'm saying before the trade for Chris Paul. I'm saying acquiring Chris Paul in general was a bad idea. Because you know that leading into that offseason that you have to repay him no matter what. Right?
No,
so,
but
by trading
again,
for him, you know that you're going to have to sign him
for
4 years.
Anyway. You're not going to get anywhere with James Harden being the only guy on your team.
Could have gotten somebody else.
Like who?
I don't know. That's what I'm saying. I need to look at it.
We'll reevaluate.
I don't think Chris Paul is the only player that was available that offseason. Is what I'm saying.
I think
I would have gotten Blake instead. Right. People want to blow up LA anyways.
It's okay to be wrong, Peter.
It's not. That's why you're being so stubborn about it. Ooh, what?
I think you're just itching to get to Denver.
Let's move on to Denver then. I think out of the four teams, they probably most likely have the most promising future, right? Obviously, they were just running behind Nikola Jokic, who's, I think he, from what I've heard, he's in line to either be a first or second team player this year. Jamal Murray finally, you know, sort of came into his own, obviously didn't hit a lot of shots in the last game, which sort of led to their downfall. And their cap situation is actually looking pretty good, unless Paul Millsap resigns, which he probably will. Or no, they have a team option for him, never mind. Denver just looks really promising with this young core.
Yeah, like they were all together. I think they were the youngest team going into the playoffs, and they have a lot of good players. But I think in terms of what they do going forward, I think there is probably an adjustment that needs to be made in terms of their roster and getting one more player that can give you consistent offensive production. I think they were expecting Millsap to do that, and he had good production and he was efficient, but sometimes late in the games, I think he wasn't getting the ball enough. Maybe that's just kind of the system they play, or maybe the matchup. But I think they need like a third scoring option that gives you like consistently 10 to 15 points. And especially if they don't sign Millsap, that's going to be kind of their main focus going in, because they have great players that come off the bench and they have good depth. They're obviously expecting, I think, Michael Porter Jr. to be returning next year to actually start playing for them. And he's supposed to give them kind of a bit more flexibility in their lineups, and he might even take most of Craig's minutes away, because I think he's just a more productive player in terms of offense than Craig. But I think Denver has a lot of upside. I think they're the team that's probably going to be in the same position they were next year, hopefully with a bit more consistency from Jamal Murray, and they can probably go to the Western Conference Finals as long as they make the right moves and nothing absurd.
I think they need to sign a aging point guard who's always injured.
Oh, like for $160 million?
Is he gone? Josh, did you leave?
I'm here.
How can I take shots at you? You're so quiet.
Nah, man. Fun. I want to see Isaiah go to Orlando this offseason and revitalize his career.
That would be wild. Instead of DJ Augustine.
Or Markel Fultz, who's just still waiting in the wings.
Oh, I forgot Markel Fultz is there. That's rough.
You know, since they're probably not going to pick up Paul Millsap's team option at $30 million, and they may not be able to re-sign him depending on what other teams offer him in terms of contracts, this might be a team that looks at a guy like Al Horford, right? We already talked about him. If he opts out, I think he'd be a perfect fit there.
Yeah, I think he would be a great fit, or even maybe, obviously Tobias Harris is just too much money for that team, but he would be a player that can kind of give you that third option like on their offense with Jamal Murray, Jokic, and Harris, and I think he would just fit well. Like, he's not a huge personality. I think he would like mix well with the younger players, and that's another player that could look to help them. I think the nice thing with Denver is they have a few spots where they can upgrade in terms of they can maybe get like a better two guard, or maybe even get a four, which would probably be the obvious vacancy if they don't re-sign Millsap. And then they can move other players around because they're so versatile of a team.
I'd say like a 3-4 combination right now.
Yeah.
Because Gary Harris is pretty good.
He is, but if you get someone who's like very good, as a two, you can just move Gary Harris and play like a very small lineup, and still be fine as long as you have a big enough player at the four just to cover your boards.
That's true. Paul Millsap this year is 34 years old. There's no way that they pick up that option, right?
What is he making?
30.
Yeah, that's a steep price.
Yo, guess what Paul Millsap's name is on Basketball Reference? He has one nickname.
The Handyman. Imagine. Am I right?
The Anchor Man.
Yeah, it's close.
Because he anchors the defense.
Oh, that's great.
Corny.
I think the other way Denver can improve is if, you know, they improve the small forward position and maybe go cheaper at the power forward position. because, you know, Torrey Craig's been great. And he's on like a $2 million contract next year, which is amazing. You know, you can keep him off the bench and then keep Barton as, like, you know, your sixth man, obviously. And they should be looking at a guy like Chris Middleton as well.
Is Middleton a free agent this year?
Yes.
He is.
Oh, baby.
There's going to be a lot of teams that are going after him, obviously. I think Dallas is another team that's going to be going after him hard. So there's no guarantees that Milwaukee comes back the same team either, unless they just offer him the 5-year max, which they might do.
Yeah, he's not European. Dallas doesn't need him. Come on, guys. Stick to your guys here. Come on. All right. Is that it? That's all? Everybody got any other quarrels to speak of?
I think shout out to George Hill, who's going to have a monster game, too.
Yeah. Yeah. George Hill went over 6 in game 1. Yeah. He's nice to play the Celtics. A whole different game than the Raptors.
He's due.
Yeah. I mean, he really could light up Fred VanVleet. Let's be real.
We've been waiting for the Fred VanVleet game for a very long time. I think this is finally going to be his game.
What, like 6 points?
Hopefully we get
maybe
10.
Maybe 10 and a not negative number.
Yeah.
Who pops off first, Norm Powell or Fred VanVleet?
Well, Powell sort of did pop off last game. He had 2 threes.
Yeah, in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Hold on.
Yeah,
I mean, like, really pop off. Who's going to hit double digits scoring first?
VanVleet. VanVleet actually had a lot of good looks that game, too. They were giving him the shots, especially off the pick and roll. But
he missed a lot of shots. Well, he missed 3 shots. But he didn't shoot that much. He only had 4 field goal attempts.
Yeah.
This poor team.
Yeah, I think VanVleet, just because he takes more shots and he's handling the ball, and sometimes it's going to be late in the shot clock and he's going to take more shots.
Yeah. All right. I want to thank everyone for listening. Please remember to rate and subscribe. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, Anchor, all the major podcast platforms. You can hit us up on Instagram and Twitter at Stretch4Pod. And until next time, peace.